Connect the dots with Allison Rose Levy, Saturdays at noon, Eastern, on the Progressive Radio Network.
Listeners to Connecting the Dots. I'm Allison Rosevi, and we're here with you every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. The theme of our show, Connect the Dots, is all about connecting the dots between personal health, society's health, the health of the environment, and having healthy food, water, air, and health care as well. Very often, we're on one of two sides on the healthcare spectrum. We either think about, if I have a health problem, the doctors can fix me up, or on the other side of the spectrum, we think, well, I can take care of this with or without any help and kind of, have a healthy lifestyle and follow health practices and all will be well. So along those lines, we're very often talking about, how to eat a healthier diet, drink plenty of water. But many of us who are health conscious have kind of overlooked the role the environment plays in our health. And, if the water is polluted, if the food is filled with chemicals and toxins and GMOs and organic foods are corrupted, then the very foods we rely upon for health, the very water we rely upon and air we rely upon for life, really can be contaminated in ways that impact our health. And unfortunately, that's going on throughout our country and elsewhere in the world as well, due to some energy production and acquisition processes. We've seen them in the Gulf oil spill where, unfortunately, drilling offshore to get a quantity of oil has polluted the Gulf of Mexico, which impacts communities, lives, businesses, wildlife, fish, a food source. And we're also now seeing that through the widespread practice of a new form of gas drilling called fracking. I've reported about it on the show quite extensively. And now we're kind of in a critical time window where New York State is really about to make a decision whether to allow this to proceed or whether to ban it. I encourage anyone who's hearing this for the first time to sign up for my blog, healthjournalistblog.com, because I will connect you to key actions as well as information and future radio programs on this and related themes. We're really in a very critical time where we need to make the right decisions. And that's why I'm so thrilled that in the series that I've been doing on this gas drilling process called fracking, which, despite what you may hear, hasn't been going on for hundreds of years. That's another form of gas drilling practice. This is relatively recent and new, and it has all kinds of side effects. And I've had a variety of people, and if you haven't heard the past programs, I encourage you to listen and go to the Connect the Dots archive page on Progressive Radio Network, where you can hear from Bridget Shields, who talks about the health impacts and gas, what happens when drilling comes to a community in Pennsylvania. We also have Carl Arnold on the show with me discussing health impacts. And on my website, Health Journalist Blog, you'll find my prior radio program in which I interview Theo Colburn, who is very knowledgeable about all of the health problems related to this. On today's show, actually, we're giving a very interesting perspective, and our guest today is someone who actually is familiar with the issues facing landowners, property owners who are interested in leasing their land for drilling, because even though the average person who's not a landowner in a region where this is currently happening might think, well, this is something that the federal government regulates, not true, really. They don't regulate the chemicals or that the state regulates. Yes, the state can ban the practice, but if it proceeds in a state, and as we're under consideration right now in New York, it really comes down to the choice of individual landowners to sell their property for leasing, and that's a part of the process we haven't really discussed so thoroughly, and in fact, in some cases, it even happens against the will of the individual landowner. So our guest today is Mike Bernard, and he's someone who can really speak from the landowner's perspective, from the property owner's perspective. He has an organization, a website called SpectraEnergyWatch.com, where there's a lot of information, and today he's going to clue us in on Connect the Dots. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks very much, Allison.
It's great to have you with us. So you basically have gotten involved as one of a group of property owners. Is that correct?
Well, that's where it started. My point of view, as you suggested, my and my wife's point of view is driven by experience because we are former gas leaseholders among 150 property owners in Pennsylvania, Bedford County, Pennsylvania, who ended up fighting eminent domain for 2 years. With Spectra Energy, a storage and transmission company from Houston, and their action, their eminent domain action, was backed by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC. So that experience, you know, someone once said there's two forms of education, parchment and scar tissue, and we rarely forget the lessons learned by scar tissue, and that experience activated us on the issue of property rights as it relates to shale gas extraction, because shale gas has a long vapor trail. In addition to concerns about health, environment, air quality, water quality, it also impacts property rights, and a lot of people don't realize that. If you decide to lease your land, if you have the choice, in New York State the choice isn't good, but if you decide to lease it, you're placing a big bet that everything will go right with the drilling. Now, we ended up, in our experience, with what is called an underground storage reservoir. This was a project of Spectra Energy. They came to Pennsylvania precisely because of what they anticipated would be the Marcellus Shale Gold Rush, and they ended up constructing a storage facility. And when some folks I talk to hear storage facility, they believe that sounds rather benign. But the storage facility the folks in Bedford County are now living with is a 12 billion cubic feet underground natural gas storage reservoir.
Oh, my.
It's in the depleted wells of the Oriskany Formation. So our drilling experience was tied to the Oriskany Formation. This was just before the Marcellus Shale began to emerge in Pennsylvania. On top of that, there is literally a 5,000 horsepower compressor station, which has had problems from day one with shutdowns and blowdowns. In addition,
now let's just explain to listeners, because a lot of my listeners are in environments which this would be totally new to them. What is a compressor station?
Well, compressor stations are used in the drilling process, and they regulate the flow of gas in or out of the, in this case, the storage reservoir. If the compressor stations are sited along pipelines, which they often are, or at drilling sites, they help push the gas, compress the gas, and push it through the pipeline.
I see. So that's basically when we see pictures of a site where gas drilling is happening, that's kind of the big setup with the all of the machinery that we see, apart from the drill itself. It's kind of like the drill head is, you know, the thing that goes down, but the thing that's sort of driving the engine, from what you're describing, is the compressor station. And is that correct? And is that also what makes the noise and all of that?
Yes. Some people have described it, it sounds like a jet engine crashing.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so along with this, there are 13 so far, so this is at a storage reservoir, 13 so far injection withdrawal wells. Spectra Energy has permission from FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to drill up to 23 wells. I also asked and was told that they have permission, the company has permission to frack those wells anytime it wants in order to, and I asked, so why would you have to frack a storage well? And they said, well, they would do that if they chose to in order to stimulate, quote unquote, the gas in the reservoir. On top of that, I was told by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that Spectra Energy filed for the record nearly 300 pages of material safety data sheets. And this is quoting from the FERC reply, quote, for every drilling mud and hydraulic fracturing component it could possibly use, end quote. and I downloaded the 300 pages, and of course, several of these compounds, many of them are identified as cancer-causing or probably carcinogenic. There are homes nearby, an elementary school is 3 miles away, and I think what is particularly troubling, since this was an eminent domain action, is that in my research, and I might add to your listeners, some of my best sources come from the gas industry, which is kind of interesting. You know, not everybody in the gas industry approves of the behavior. But I was pointed in the direction of something called Moss Bluff, which is Spectre Energy's underground storage reservoir outside of Houston. And so Spectre Energy, in the timeline, they filed papers with Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. In other words, we would like to build this reservoir. Here's our application. That was 2007.
You know what, Mike, let's just back off a minute here because we're getting really detailed into this one incident. And, sure. You know, the people listening to our show, all of these terms are really, really unfamiliar to I think, most listeners. They may have trouble picturing a lot of this. So let's kind of back off before we get into great detail on this particular incident and just kind of get an overview from two perspectives or three perspectives. And let's just get an overview and we'll walk right through these three perspectives. And I'm just going to say what the three of them are and then we'll go through them in turn. So the first perspective is if you are a property owner who is considering or wanting to sell, lease your land rather, for fracking, for gas drilling, for hydraulic, horizontal hydraulic fracturing form of gas drilling that is being done now in the region and is being done nationwide and in Texas and Wyoming and everywhere. What are the considerations of the landowner? That will be question one. Question two will be, what will be the consideration of people who don't even dwell in the region, why, you know, this may affect them. And then question three will be, what will be the effect upon people who live in the region immediately where this would be happening but may not be among those who are choosing to sell? So one is the property owner. Two is if you live at, you know, elsewhere in the state or region where, you know, your water supply could be affected. And then three is if you're a property holder in the region, but you're not someone that is considering leasing right now. So let's just go through, and first let's talk then about the property owners.
Sure. When property owners ask me who are considering leasing, I tell them three things. I said, first of all, because you are placing a big bet on the value of your property, go out, educate yourself, and talk to your neighbors, including your virtual neighbors. And if you're in Pennsylvania or in Maryland, for example, where they are getting concerned about the possibility of fracking, or in New York, it's easy to go over the border to Pennsylvania and visit places like Dimock, Pennsylvania, which is the poster child for poor gas drilling practices. In other words, all I'm saying is see for yourself. You know, talk to these folks because they will be happy to talk to you about their experience. So that's number one, educate yourself.
I just want to back up for 1 second. I think that sounds like excellent advice. But my question is this. You say there's a risk. In other words, you know, I know that very often the landowners will be feeling, oh, you know, I've hit the jackpot. I sign up. They find gas on my property. I get a royalty on everything they find. I have hit the jackpot. It's all roses from here on. I'm signing. So you're saying, in fact, there's a risk. What is the risk?
Well, the answer is tied to your – I said there were three considerations. So the mm-hmm. second consideration is if you really think after due diligence that you want to lease, test mm-hmm. your water. This mm-hmm. is not a casual statement. I'm mm-hmm. in the process of doing that for property we own in New York State, and it is not inexpensive. But the mm-hmm. importance of that is – if you make the bet and you lose on your property and your water is contaminated, the game is over. If a water aquifer is breached or contaminated, you can't clean it up again. And that's going to affect not only your lifestyle, I mean, think about showering or drinking, but it's also going to affect your property value. So test your water. Lab tests alone, you have to use a certified lab, and this is almost like CSI because when you talk to folks who do this for a living, and my caution is, you can't do it yourself. You can't go out with a mason jar, fill it with water from your well or tap, and then take it to a local lab. You want something that will withstand a court test, because when the gas companies come onto the property and drill a well, and then the water is reported to be contaminated, I have never encountered a situation where the water, where the gas company, the gas drillers said, oh, gosh, we're sorry. They've always said that was contaminated before we started, or it is naturally occurring, methane in water, for example. So you want to test the water, and the proper testing involves what they call holding times for the water, chain of custody. So this is serious business. Lab test alone, depending on how much you want to test. Are you just going to test the water in your tap or your well, or do you have ponds and streams on your property, which will add to the complexity? But the lab test alone can run $900 and or higher, and the role of the monitoring company that comes in and does this carefully so that it will withstand a legal challenge can run a few $1,000s on top of the lab test. And it all has to be done by a certified lab, and you have to identify the certified lab. So, but at the end of the day, if your water is contaminated, they can't fix it. You can't fix water once it's poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the connection between the placing the big bet. And the third consideration is never confuse a business acquaintance with a friend. Okay, the gas company is not your friend. I know a property owner in Pennsylvania who was part of our activity in Clearville, and he came up with the term butter jobs, which distinguish between words and deeds of the gas company. The gas company will be as sweet as pie, and they'll talk about being your good neighbor, and they'll talk about, I've heard many stories where landmen, for example, tell property owners, oh, listen, after the dust settles from the drilling, you're going to have the equivalent of a metal Christmas tree or a fire hydrant in your yard. Well, my wife and I have traveled to Dimmock, Pennsylvania, and in February we visited the Barnett Shale near Fort Worth. And let me tell you, we have no idea in the Northeast what's headed our way. These are heavy industrial zones. These are not fire hydrants or metal Christmas trees on your property. These are huge developments, industrial developments. So you want to make sure you have legal advice, and probably you need to find lawyers, and I've written about this, who have experience with mineral rights and all of that. And at the end of the day, there aren't any guarantees. I mean, we had a mineral rights lease for our experience, which many people, including other lawyers, said was the best lease they've seen. Now, this was in the 2003-2007 time frame when we were getting royalties from wells drilled into the Oriskany Formation. And we own 10 acres, so there's no 401k retirement plan in here.
Mm-hmm.
But despite the, and we had what was called a no storage clause in our lease. But when the company that did the drilling sold the assets to Spectre Energy, and Spectre Energy walked in the door with eminent domain power from the federal government, all that went out the window. So the lease you think...
Oh my goodness. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You may not have.
Mm-hmm.
And Range Resources, which has been called the king of the Marcellus in Pennsylvania by Forbes magazine, last year sent letters to landowners in Pennsylvania saying, oops, we made a mistake. You know what? We didn't correctly read the production volume coming from the wells, so we're going to have to reduce the royalty rate. Now, my first reaction to that is, does the Security Exchange Commission know that you folks can't read production volumes coming from wells you drill? again, these aren't your friends, so you've got to be very tough-minded if you persist in the belief of leasing your property.
Oh, let me just comment on this for a second, because I think you have brought up a really interesting point. You know, sometimes people ask me who are completely new to this, Mike, for example, they'll say, well, if they have these leases, can these leases just be undone? And the answer is no. Once you've signed a lease, you, the property holder, are really, you're committed until the expiration of that lease. I mean, if the state bans the whole practice, then the leases will all simply elapse, and we're hoping that that will go on in New York State. And I encourage listeners to call Governor Cuomo and your state senators to help pass the ban that is on the table, thanks to the Assembly's passage of a ban. However, if not, what you're saying here is that you've signed a lease, you're committed, you, the landowner, are kind of have signed on the dotted line, you can't get out of it unless there's a state ban or the time runs out. But then the company company can come back and go, oops, sorry, we're just changing your royalty kind of thing, which, I mean, I think that this is both would be a shock, as I'm sure it is a shock to many landowners when this happens, Mike, but also it should be a message to everyone about the credibility of these companies and, you know, how much their word and assurance is to be trusted. So I just wanted to kind of interject that. That's rather amazing that they can change your royalties just at will, it seems like.
Yeah, well, I've been fascinated by the culture of the gas and oil industry. And the gas industry loves to talk about responsible drilling practices. Well, you know, I think that's great to have responsible drilling practices. But to give you just one example, an organization of 40 U.S. and foreign gas and oil companies calls itself the Marcellus Shale Coalition. Its offices are headquartered outside of Pittsburgh. Last October, it issued, with great fanfare, its 7 guiding principles. And former governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Ridge, was there with Catherine Klaber, who is the executive director of the Marcellus Shale Coalition. And they toured through Pennsylvania talking about how wonderful this was, and this was responsible gas drilling. The second guiding principle says, we implement state-of-the-art environmental protection across our operations. So that's not an aspirational statement. State-of-the-art is the stuff that's on the shelf now, implement as present tense. I contacted Catherine Klaber. I contacted the Marcellus Shale Coalition. I contacted the PR people. I contacted former Governor Ridge. And I said, does that mean that you will, for example, use a closed-loop system to eliminate plastic line holding pits for drilling waste? Does it mean you will install vapor recovery units on...
All right, let's just back up a second and explain what that is. Currently, you're saying, and this is the case, you know, on the one hand, they're kind of going, it's safe, there's no known case of contamination at the moment we frack. They'll very often say this. There's no case of contamination at the moment we frack, but what they don't mention is that when the... nearly 600 contaminants and chemicals that are used in the process and mixed with public water, just taken straight from the public rivers and other sources without any taxation or price paid or anything, and it's hundreds and thousands of gallons. When it's mixed in with these chemicals, driven down to the ground in the fracking process, and then it comes back up again, certain large proportion of that actually stays underground, and that's our concern in terms of, you know, the potential for a little cement pipe to break or leak, and then you have, aquifer contamination potentially underground. But above ground, the water that does come up out of there is then stored, as you mentioned, in a large open pit lined with nothing other than plastic and, you know, with the presumption that I guess it will evaporate into the air. Whose air is that? For example, if it happens upstate that we have this and it's evaporating up into the air, then that's the air current that actually comes down to New York City to keep our city cool and drive the pollutants in the city out to the ocean. If it's happening north of you, upstream from you in Pennsylvania, then it's coming down to the areas of the cities as well. So what you're saying is those open plastic pits are problematic in and of themselves. And so you were saying that something that they could be handled in a different manner, but they aren't. Probably is that for cost reasons, or how could they be handled differently, and why aren't they being handled differently?
Right, and I think you make an excellent point, because people who are concerned about this are looking at the whole drilling process, not just quote-unquote hydraulic fracturing. I mean, there's a complete chain of events that takes place here. And my point was simply with, here's an industry coalition bragging about its principles, and when I asked them specifics, like I mentioned vapor recovery units on condensate tanks, zero-emission glycol dehydration units, pneumatic no-bleed valves. I mean, in other words, this...
Okay, what do these various things do that you're requesting? Just to give, you know, so we can follow the discussion here. What are these various, because these are terms that our listeners are unfamiliar with. So, you know, would these then close those off? So, you know, close off the pit? Are you suggesting a closed pit? Or what is it that you're saying should be part of this? Because, you know, these terms are unfamiliar to us.
Right. And it isn't necessary. So we can give a couple of examples so folks understand. The point is, when I confronted the industry with specific technology that exists, they refused to answer the question. Went after them for 3 or 4 months. They refused to answer the question. So I ended up writing an op-ed piece that was published in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. To this day, they refuse to answer the question. In other words, what does your guiding principle, which you say you embrace because it's your legacy and you live by, I mean, these are their words. I mean, these are passionate declaration on their website. But they refuse to answer. So will you, for example, use vapor recovery units on the condensate tanks because that would reduce or eliminate emissions of volatile organic compounds? As you pointed out,
which is what creates smog and what can make a region, for example, in New York, that upstate region is a tourist and sustainable agriculture region, and it has the purest air in the state. And that air also, as I mentioned before, kind of helps clean New York City. So you're saying that instead you have the pollutants you mentioned are those that cause smog, which is why, for example, now Wyoming has the same smog levels as L.A. So you're saying that they could control that through the use of these technological devices, but instead they not only do it, but they don't even really want to engage in a conversation about it, is what you're saying.
And I'm saying that they substitute principles with platitudes. In other words, these are grown-ups. They announce guiding principles, but they do not do what they say they will do. So you got another issue of trust and integrity, just like breaking leases. So there's a long track record with the gas industry that they do not want to confront when folks ask them questions.
Right. I mean, it's interesting because Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's a highly regarded, leader in environmental movement here in New York with Riverkeeper, this large organization, he also serves on the National Resource Defense Council, and he has frequently he's been one that has not been, that for some reason is still hoping, the hope against hope of the earlier environmental movement, that so-called natural gas, which, remember, is a branding name, given all we're talking about here, how natural is it? Not very. It's only natural in that it comes of the earth. That's what's natural about it. The whole process of removal is, highly toxic and dangerous on multiple levels, as we're discussing. But because this was originally the hope and the way that they branded and positioned themselves, there are some environmentalists, and he's an example of that, who, maintain the hope that, this could still, be happening that way. And so therefore he said, well, the process could be made clean, could, as in my fondest dreams, and will or is, given the wishes of the company in question and the industry in question and the hold that they may have on government officials, for example, that's a whole kind of different sort of thing. And in fact, in Pennsylvania, you have a situation where it does appear that the public officials are indeed quite supportive of this and don't even want to tax it or do anything with it, really, to control it, or they're very unresponsive to the concerns of homeowners and all of that. So, could happen, is happening, and, what they actually do, there's a very big gap there. And you're pointing out that the gap is an integrity gap that shows up on multiple levels, basically, right? I mean,
and has an impact on property, air, water, property rights.
So tell me, let's just, so this is some kind of new and sort of heavy information, I think, for people. Can you just, if you wouldn't mind also, and we're going to come into actually a break soon. So, I think maybe what we'll do is we will we'll take a break and then, come back to this, because I would also love to hear, obviously, you came into this – sort of hoping and believing what was being told, and I'm sure you know many other people who do. And so I'd also like to hear, you know, what happens to, like right now, for example, you know, people that may be unfamiliar with the issue would be hearing, well, you know, the people who want it say this and the people who don't want it say that. It's interesting because you're speaking to the people who wanted it. You're one who wanted it. And I'd like to talk more about, you know, what happens to the people who wanted it when the reality dawns. But we'll do that after our break. I'm talking with Mike Bernard, who is an expert in landowner and property rights concerning gas drilling. And I'm Allison Rose Levy. Please stay with us here on for our second part of Connect the Dots after the break.
Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for all things progressive.
Big name off the beginning of a beautiful friendship, because the stronger my heart gets, the stronger my pen gets.
Did you miss your favorite show on Progressive Radio Network? Go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com anytime, day or night, for all of our great shows. Don't be left out and miss important shows and information. Visit ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and be in the loop.
I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. We're proud to announce that the Progressive Radio Network will be bringing you our live call-in talk show, Prescriptions for Health, every Monday afternoon starting June the 6th from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Mark your calendars and save up your questions so you can ask us about possible strategies for your health problems, whether mainstream or complementary and alternative.
We also invite your questions and comments about any area of health care, including politics, economics, ethics, philosophy, and styles of healthcare.
So remember to tune in every Monday from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to the Progressive Radio Network's Prescriptions for Health show.
I'm Hans.
I'm Yoli.
We are Caribbean Spice. Come join us every Monday between the hours of 8 through 10 p.m. in which we will be discussing the issues of the economics, the culture, the politics of the Caribbean, and we will be sharing that with you. If you miss a show, you can download it on the archives. Again, Caribbean Spice, every Monday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Why should you be listening to the Progressive Radio Network? Here are a few hosts that call PRN home. Award-winning investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker Michael Rupert. Acclaimed theoretical physicist Michio Kaku. Notable media critic and international journalist, the news dissector, Danny Schechter. Leading progressive journalists such as Stephen Ledman, John Rappaport, and Glenn Ford have also found a home with us. We also have advice from Richard Martin on how to protect yourself from the ongoing financial collapse. John Mueller tells us his firsthand account on moving out of the U.S. and making a new life for himself in another country on his show, The Expat Files. Along with all these informative programs, we also have health shows hosted by America's top doctors like Mayor Eisenstein, Cheryl Selman, and of course, Gary Null. The Progressive Radio Network is the place for news and information.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy. I've been a health journalist for 25 years. I'm a blogger on the Huffington Post and host of Connect the Dots every Saturday at noon Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. We bring you a wide range of experts, health experts, environmental experts, policy experts, talking about all of the health and environmental issues that affect our food, health, water, personal health, and collective health. On today's show, I'm speaking with Mike Bernard, who is a landowner, property owner, with expertise in what happens from the property owner's perspective when the new process called fracking, a new form of gas drilling, comes to your region, and in fact our region. And I just want to kind of give a few shout outs here for people who would like to follow this more closely, having listened to this show. Mike has a website. It's called Spectra Energy Watch. Spectra Energy is the name of one of the companies, you know, one of the many companies that is doing this. It's a Texas-based company. So Spectra is spelled S-P-E-C-T-R-A, energywatch.com. And there's a wealth of information, blogs, you know, advice of all kinds. And I really highly recommend this if either you or someone you know is considering leasing land for drilling. As he mentioned earlier, you know, the people who come in and try to entice you into a lease to lease your mineral rights for gas drilling are not your personal friends. And, you know, in fact, they have a playbook to get you to sign, and there's a lot more that you need to know about to protect yourself and your property, your values, your family, and everything than what they may be telling you. And so I really highly recommend that you go to SpectraEnergyWatch.com. And also, as a sidelight, and maybe we'll talk about this with Mike a little bit, there recently was one person, people come in and sell, the landowners are called landsmen, and someone recently left their playbook by mistake in the driveway of someone in Ohio that they were trying to sell. And so, you know, it's quite revelatory in terms of showing, you know, how they really try to play people, you know, topics that they try to keep away from, things they're told to say, et cetera. And also for both gas drilling and all of the health-related actions, which includes maintaining organics, getting the right kind of health care, advice on integrative health care, please do sign up also at my website, which is healthjournalistblog.com, and you will receive a once-a-week e-zine, my e-zine Health Outlook, which has my weekly Huffington blogs, as well as announcements of upcoming radio shows, lists of archives of past programs so that you can listen in to shows that interest you. And I also very frequently, in this time, taking care of one's health means taking action on a societal level. So I also list and provide easy links for you to take action. And this week our action is calling the governor and asking for the fracking ban, calling Governor Cuomo. So you can go to my website for links and information about that. Also, I invite people to join my Facebook page, Connect the Dots. So now back talking with Mike Bernard of Spectra Energy Watch. Mike, it's so great to have you with us. In the last segment, you were basically pointing out the tremendous discrepancy of integrity and the many, many places that this shows up in the actions of, at one point you said they respond with platitudes. In other words, they have scripted PR, the gas companies have scripted PR statements, don't they, to respond to many of these things. I mean, do you have a few examples of those by any chance, of, you know, things that they say and things that they do, kind of thing?
Well, you're absolutely right, because in my conversations with regulators at both the federal and the state level, I would often find them using the same, call them key messages. Mm-hmm. For example, with the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, I was asking them about all the problems at the compressor station, these shutdowns and blowdowns. And the response I got back...
These are the accidents that actually happen, you know, when they say the record is safety, what you're referring to there in terms of shutdowns and blowdowns is these are explosions. These are spills. These are where it goes wrong. And they happen on an almost daily basis. I mean, aren't there? There are thousands of documented incidents. So just, you know, that's what you're referring to. So you were confronting the government about this. Department of Environmental, responsible for the environment over there in Pennsylvania, and when confronted, what did they say?
Well, in this particular situation, these series of events, their reply was, it's not an uncommon occurrence. It's not an uncommon occurrence. And I kept going back to them. And I finally went to the company, to Spectre Energy, to ask them, and they said, it's not an uncommon occurrence. And I tried to go back to the regulators and say, do you see what's happening here? Because I had a conversation less than 2 weeks ago with someone at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And this ties to your comment about why would landowners do this. Landowners may also consider leasing because they believe the government will protect them. They will regulate, you know, and protect the air and the water and the property rights. But too often that's not the case. And so in the situation, for example, I'll give you one egregious example.
Mm-hmm.
In the process for Spectre Energy applying to FERC, you know, they have to go through all the paperwork to install this storage facility. They started that paperwork in 2007. 3 years earlier, the company had a catastrophic failure at another underground storage facility outside of Houston, where it's headquartered. There were two explosions, 6.5 days of fire with flames as high as 1,000 feet.
Oh, my.
Two evacuations, and the fire consumed more than 6 billion cubic feet of gas.
Oh, my.
So I went to the company, first of all, and I said, tongue firmly planted in cheek. I said, well, what did you learn from that experience that is going to make this storage reservoir in Pennsylvania even safer? The response was, we don't think it's appropriate to discuss that with you. Excuse me. So then I went to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and I talked to the project manager overseeing this, and I said, were you aware that just 3 years earlier they had catastrophic failure at another storage chamber? The answer was no. But it's okay. It won't matter. And I thought to myself, where's the due diligence? If any one of your listeners go out and apply for a job somewhere, they're going to be expected to show their performance record, their track record, CV resume. Why aren't government regulators looking at the track record, the performance? That's pretty straightforward, you know? How many violations have you had in the last 5 years? Have you had any catastrophic failures, you know? Have you had any contamination issues? That should be part of the due diligence.
Well, absolutely. I mean, so what you're saying is, let's just sort of summarize, if any new listeners have joined the show. Basically, they have taken the use of eminent domain, which is that they can go under anyone's property without their permission. They want to store they're storing some – what are they actually storing down there? You can let us know that. They're storing the gas down there, or some form of – or fracking materials are being stored down there. And they have a bad and dangerous track record. So through eminent domain, they can go under your land. They can store these things down there. They've had a bad track record. They're not accountable to report, you know, to reassure either the public about it, nor is the government kind of on the watch about the problem. Why would they even assume that it would be fine this time around, I wonder? But what is it exactly they're storing down under there, Mike? I mean, just to get clear about that.
In those depleted, formerly those now depleted gas wells in what is called the Oriskany Formation, they are storing natural gas, which they bring from other sources all the way down in Texas up to the Northeast. And they are in Pennsylvania precisely because of what their anticipation of the Marcellus Shale gold rush. Now, the thing that
why are they bringing gas up here if they think there's going to be a gold rush up here? That part I'm having trouble understanding.
Well, they get money for storing gas, and so they have what they call seasons, and they will store the gas, for example, during the warm weather seasons, hold it there in this 12 billion cubic feet underground reservoir, and then as the weather starts to turn colder, they ship that gas in 30-inch transmission pipelines to the Northeast or other locations. So it's a holding area, and there are a lot of storage reservoirs. I mean, the judge at one point in our case said, well, this is vital to have this storage reservoir for the heating season. And I tried to point out that Pennsylvania has more underground gas storage reservoirs than any other state in the continental U.S. It's not vital, you know. But that's part of the process of eminent domain. And the thing for listeners to understand is, as I call this part of the vapor trail of shale gas extraction. If someone puts a well on your property, they're going to need a pipeline to get it off. And guess how they're going to get the rights to put that pipeline in? That's eminent domain, too.
Mm-hmm. So that affects your neighbors. So you have something put on your, or does it affect, I mean, that affects everybody then. If they have to get it off, then they have to put in a pipeline on your land, on your neighbor's land, all over the place, right?
Wherever they want to take the gas. So they have to get the gas to market at the intermediate station of the storage reservoirs. And there, as I said, there are scores and scores of them in Pennsylvania alone. And so guess what? If your neighbor has a gas well, you could have a pipeline running across your property.
But you don't have any say about that. The minute that neighbor sells, they basically, you know, that's it. You're screwed. So this is to say that people, for example, in areas where, well, you know, like the thought is often, I can't tell my neighbor what to do with his land. That's his free choice, you know, and that's his business. Well, the answer is it could come right. Through eminent domain to get that off of his land, he's invading your land, and you didn't get a vote. So for anybody kind of sitting by and saying, well, I can't tell somebody what to do, and it's none of my business, it is your business. It's everyone's business. Isn't that part of your message, Mike?
Yes, and the great frustration with the quote-unquote taking power of eminent domain is stop and ask ourselves, who possesses the vital asset coveted by gas companies? It's the landowners. Mm-hmm. And yet landowners do not stand on a level playing field legally, economically, or politically if you get into a legal battle over eminent domain.
Mm-hmm.
Unlikely. Mm-hmm. It's unlikely that you would win the eminent domain battle. It's possible, but it's unlikely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is there any compensation, or it's just tough luck, you know?
There is compensation. You know, you go to that Fifth Amendment in the Bill of Rights, and it talks at the end about nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. But just compensation, you know, a property owner's idea of just compensation and a gas company's idea of just compensation are worlds apart. And so you've got this permanent facility, and it makes money every day, every year, and they want to give you a one-time payment, which is usually pennies on the dollar. So you don't have a lot of leverage as a landowner. And a lot of people, I mean, they, you know, do they have the stamina and the resources to fight a legal battle that could last 2 years?
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, that's really serious. Now, tell me a little bit from your experience in your region. We had promised listeners that we would discuss this. You know, tell me a little bit from your region. You know, people sign. They think that they are kind of, you know, the gold rush will begin. And what happens? What happens instead? And how do they react to it when they, I mean, does the day come where they kind of admit, wow, we've been misled? Like, what happens from your experience in that region?
Well, what we are seeing now, frankly, fascinates me. It's what I call the rise of public opinion. It's like the Polish solidarity movement, okay,
mm-hmm.
went against the establishment, the status quo, and rejected the propaganda. And as you have pointed out, and I believe you've had guests on your program, there are more and more individuals. These are men and women with families, with jobs. There is one woman, Crystal Stroud in Bradford County, PA, who has started to stand up and tell her story, and it's very compelling. She describes herself as a 29-year-old, formerly healthy, wife, mother, and small business owner. And she mm-hmm. and her husband have a small piece of property, I believe it's 2 acres, and they signed a gas leak with Chesapeake for $5,000. And like many people, thought, oh, this is wonderful. We'll have some extra money coming in, and we can add to the house. And she said that, when I signed that lease, she said, that's the day my life turned into a nightmare. And she, here's the other interesting thing. She began to get sick. She went to her doctors. And, of course, as you would know from your great work, doctors really don't understand what this the effect of this shale gas on health is. I mean, they're just not used to it at this stage. And so they diagnosed her as having anxiety attacks and prescribed, I believe it was Zoloft.
Mm-hmm.
Around that time, she got water tests back. And the water test said, among other things, there was barium in their water that they had been drinking and showering in. And she took the water test to the doctors, and the doctors did a holy cow and went back and redid their blood test and everything and found that she had barium poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
And what she has learned from her experience is that barium poisoning in the blood, which comes from the drilling, is often misdiagnosed as either anxiety or flu.
Mm-hmm.
You have a complete, and more people, you know, Ron Guler, Stephanie Halowich in Western Pennsylvania, had no idea what was coming in their direction. And they,
mm-hmm.
too, are standing up and telling their story. And it includes these ill health effects, you know, the nosebleeds, the headaches, the slurred speech because you're breathing this air. And the response too often from the gas companies and the regulators is, well, you know, we tested the air, and, yeah, it's in the air, but it's within permit limitations. Excuse me?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
permit limitations?
Yeah.
So if this isn't regulated, then, of course, they're permitted to do anything they want. I mean, pretty much. Isn't that kind of the problem there?
Well, that's the problem. And my point about the guiding principles is even when they say this is what we do, they don't do it.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying it isn't within the permit levels, or the permit levels are not adequate to address the problem?
The permit levels are not adequate, especially when you consider ongoing or long-term effects.
Right. In other words, they're not even setting the proper levels. And are there people out there who, you know, I know what I've heard expressed often is, well, the gas rush comes, we're going to make a fortune, we're not going to care, we're going to be out of here. Are there people for whom, you know, Valhalla hits? I mean, how many have you seen, if any?
I've seen very few. I know that 60 Minutes, of course, ran that program, and they used the term shalionaires because there are some people out there who have made big money. But
mm-hmm.
other property owners have told me, including property owners in Texas, and one in particular I'm thinking of, he said, I'm not opposed to drilling. I'm opposed to being poisoned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So actually, it's kind of like one tiny. It's like kind of like the lottery, and so maybe one out of a 1,000 wins. But meanwhile, what you're betting is you're not just betting your own land value. You're betting your land value because if you lose, your land value will go down. If you lose, your health may go down. If you lose, you may lose your water. But you're also not betting your own only. You're betting your neighbors, your communities, the community. Communities downstream for water and air. You're betting the local farms in the area that are producing food because, you know, these are toxins and they're going into food, into what would have otherwise been healthy food. So, in fact, you're betting both your bank and everybody else's bank. For an extremely small percentage of people who really, get any positive return from this. And as you're pointing out, people don't usually have in place any kind of legal protections that'll help them. So, this is, in fact, this travels far down the line because where you have this inner region, it has to be piped out, and that's going to affect a whole bunch of other people as well. So this is something that, it's within the bounds of my personal property, but what I decide on my property puts a lot of others at risk. And you're saying from what you've seen that the return to the individual is terrible as well. What happens when you, I'm presuming you go and speak in areas where people are making a decision about this. What kind of reception do you get? Do people get it? I mean, do they kind of understand, and give you a good listen, or are they kind of so caught up in the dream that they're going to make a killing that they don't want to hear from you?
I would say many to most people in groups I've talked with get it. I've also talked with landowners in eastern Pennsylvania, or one of them who represented a large group, who was frustrated because he believed they did all the due diligence they needed to do, but were being held back on leasing by issues with the what is it, the Delaware River Basin Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they found a lawyer, you know, and they thought they believe they have, you know, excellent protection and all of that. And here is someone who, on the surface, is doing all the right stuff in terms of due diligence, but that person and the group of landowners is still placing a big bet. And one of the other laws of unintended consequences that is probably starting to develop out of this, in addition to all the health issues and property rights issues, are legal issues. I just read a white paper, a business white paper, titled The Next Asbestos, and it looked at five issues that it said would be tied to an explosion in lawsuits, litigation. And one of the five was hydraulic fracturing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they would, right now, the intent is to go toward the gas industry. But I've talked to landowners in different states who feel very frustrated because, for example, one in Texas bought the 10 acres for the dream home but didn't get the mineral rights. And the property owner who owned the mineral rights and sold him the 10 acres, he made sure, he leased the land, but he made sure that his home was surrounded by, I don't know, 50 acres or something like that, that gas companies couldn't lease on. And so now this property owner has encountered all of these problems. Nearly four of his 10 acres is occupied by two hydraulically fractured wells and all the equipment that comes with it. And they're 300 feet from the door of his house. And he is talking about, you know, maybe it's time to sue the property owner who owned the mineral rights and didn't protect my property, but protected his property. So, you know, there is much more to come on all of this.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you know, it's kind of like, it's really a question because it's calling us not just to, what you're saying is, I mean, I guess it was, theoretically, it was legal for, you know, for the guy who held the mineral rights to do what he wanted for himself and say the heck with you. But, I mean, how would people typically look to would they typically know, for example, that the mineral rights are excluded from their land purchase? I mean, how do they make such a purchase where that's excluded? You know, some would say, well, why didn't they look into it and why did they buy a piece of land that had the mineral rights excluded? You know,
I agree, and I suspect that many, I don't know this, don't think about mineral rights, you know, unless they're in a state where mineral rights is headline news. But in between Pennsylvania and New York, since you mentioned this, I was told that forced pooling, which was just a variation of eminent domain, forced pooling is at the top of the wish list for the gas industry in Pennsylvania. And I was told by one person who said the gas industry is willing to trade paying a severance tax if they can get forced pooling. In New York State, surprise, surprise, it's already here under what is called the compulsory integration law. And you only have to go to the New York State's Department of Environmental Conservation website and look up options for landowners and be prepared for a big shock. Because three options, and none of them are very good if you would prefer not to lease. And they have language like, if you prefer not to lease, keep in mind that you may be required to pay, quote-unquote, your share of drilling costs, of placing gathering lines, and such like that. And you think, what is
your
that?
Your share? What does that mean?
Your share. I guess my expectation would be the gas industry would calculate it and say, okay, well, you didn't sign up with us. We're still going underneath your property. And by the way, here's your share of the bill.
You have to pay for it? That, whoa. You have to pay.
The statement on the DEC website. It's staggeringly shocking.
Huh. So that means if they decide that they need to go through your property to, you know, do whatever you need to, that you have to pay them for their cost of doing it?
The words on the DEC website are, and they say, read your options carefully. And if you choose option one, that means, yes, I want to sign up. Then you're a good boy or girl. But if you choose option two or three, that's not so good. And I haven't encountered this yet, but there they use the phrase, you will have to pay, quote-unquote, your share of drilling costs and gathering lines, and I think there was a third issue there.
Unbelievable.
Calculate
Why
that,
would that be considered your share?
Yeah, well, the gas industry, from my experience, they'll calculate. The government won't be involved. They'll just say, well, that's your bill. You got to pay it. You could fight it in court, but you would probably not win because that's the law. So that's something that folks in New York may want to raise Cain about. I mean, on one hand, I've told people, hey, listen, if you own the mineral rights and you want a lease, I would try to persuade you not to, but at the end of the day, you have a right. You know, your property. You got to take into account everything else that may or may not happen. But in New York State, I don't have that right, nor do other. You know, I don't have it in any effective way.
Wow, that's incredible. We're coming to the end of our show here, and we're ending on a horror note for New Yorkers, so please call Government Cuomo. You don't never even can tell where that gas line pipeline is going to go. It could go right under your apartment building that you own in New York City, and you know your share might include something. So I want to thank you so much, Mike Bernard, for being with us today, so knowledgeable. And please do go and check out his website, spectraenergywatch.com. And stay with us next week. Return to Connect the Dots at noon on Saturdays Eastern Time every week on Progressive Radio. I'm Allison Rose Levy, and thank you for being with us today. And please tune in again next week to Connect the Dots.